Tuesday in February, bringing to you another edition of the weekly Linux show, talking about the latest and greatest exciting news in the Linux and open source community. We're going to have a slim panel tonight. We're going to be down by one. Doc is off loafing in the Caribbean. They're having the annual company meeting for the Linux Journal. For those of you who are sort of not familiar with the inner workings of the Linux Journal, no reason why you should be, really. The Linux Journal is really just like a family business. There's a group of people who have been working on it since its inception, and so being that everybody working there is pretty much friends, they pretty much are unified in the idea that if they're going to have a company meeting, it's going to be at a place where everybody wants to go on vacation. So the entire staff of the Linux Journal is out in the Caribbean somewhere, so Doc is unavailable. He will be back with us next week. But we'll talk about Doc, though.
Behind his back. Doc can't hear
his
us now.
Back. So we'll talk about Doc. But the rest of the panel is here. How are you doing tonight, Arnie?
Doing fine. Getting prepared to give an examination to my students tonight. So.
Are you up at the end of the quarter right now?
No. We're the semester started. We have semesters, and semester started in January. So we're into it, but not very far.
I'm on quarters, and our quarter ends next Monday.
And quarters is too short for us.
Yeah, it's the last day of our quarters. Monday. I like quarters better than semesters because you get, probably a week additional off every year.
Oh, wow.
So I sort of like it that way. Gives me the opportunity to participate in spring break, too, so that's always fun. So, Russ, how are you doing tonight?
I'm hanging in. I'm doing pretty well.
So how was Minnesota last week?
So much joy. Well, actually it was last week was New York. I think it was the week before was Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so I get to go to all the wonderfully cold places in the middle of the winter, and hopefully Nome, Alaska is not on the list, but we're surviving.
Yeah. So they're sending you to the cold weather ports during the winter. Does this mean that they're going to be sending you to Honduras in July?
We'll find out. That's all I can say.
Yeah, we'll find out for sure. So how are you doing tonight, Kevin?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Is all the equipment running up to stuff right now?
More or less.
Are you excited about our soon-to-come new edition?
Oh, yeah.
Quite
cool. Everything works.
For those of you who are part of our listening audience, you know that we have had a fundraising program underway for the last several months, for about 3 months now, called Buy Kevin a Gentner Fund, and we've done reasonably well enough on raising some of the funds with that fundraiser. We very recently, a couple of weeks ago, got an official letter from a vendor who is going to be picking up the lion's share of the cost of this PBX hybrid system that we've been talking about for so long. So we're sort of targeting right now that we're probably somewhere around 6 weeks away from rolling out this new technology. This is going to be very cool for all the listeners because we're going to be able to go back and do something that we haven't done for years and years and years, and that's we're going to be able to take listener phone calls. It will be calls over the Internet, so we're pretty much limited to taking calls from people who do have a broadband connection in a reasonably decent sound card, but things will be changing with that now that we're going to be able to take calls. We've been waiting for this for a long time. So our combination VoIP, PBX, and Gentner unit all combined into one is now a reality. We still could use a little extra money. If there's anybody out there who would like to donate at the last minute, while we're wrapping up the deal on this system, we're certainly willing to take donations still. I shouldn't complain. We're only a couple hundred dollars short at this point, so I shouldn't complain at all. The vendor in particular, a company by the name of Digium, is a PBX manufacturer should be of note to you people out in the Linux Show audience, because they're the world's first that we are aware of. They're the world's first open source PBX vendor. And
all right.
We're going to be talking about them a lot in the upcoming weeks, because their technology is really pretty remarkable. And they sort of built on the early successes of the company QuickNet, and took the ideas that QuickNet came up with and really pushed them to their logical conclusion, which was an actual full-blown PBX using low-cost port cards. So that's going to be fun. We're going to get to go back to taking direct listener calls in over the Internet. That's going to be a lot of fun. And Kevin and I have been looking forward to that for really a couple of years now. Finally have gotten it done. So exciting, exciting, exciting. Let's go ahead and jump right on into segment number one. I should let everybody know that joining us tonight for, I think it's now 4 weeks in a row, a surprise call from Eric Raymond. Good evening, Eric. How are you doing?
Good evening.
And, well, Eric, you called in just as we were starting, so I, at this point, have no clue why you called. But just jump on in.
Just to hang out and enjoy the madness.
Okay, just jump on in anytime you want to. I'm sure there is a topic that has gotten your ire, or at least your attention. And plus,
ire? Moi? How could you say
that? Case surprise.
Plus the fact,
I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you impugn Eric's reputation by saying that, Jeff. Shocked.
Well, I do have a question for you later that I think would be an interesting couple minutes of discussion. But let's go ahead and jump on into segment one, number one. Russ, you got a couple of stories out there. What do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, there's a few of them out there, and they kind of cover the gamut, I think, tonight. It's first one, and all these ones are out on the Linux Show website. You can find the hyperlinks there. One is that as we are undoubtedly well aware, Microsoft is pushing hard to prove that the rather generic word Windows is actually their valuable trademark. And as a result, a project that I've been aware of for quite some time now, which used to be called WX Windows, is now being renamed to WX Widgets. And, you know, it just kind of goes to show that, you know, there's some spillover here from the Windows-Lindos controversy. But apparently it bit this little project in the butt as a result of it. WX Windows, for folks who haven't played with it, is actually a toolkit that allows you to design user interfaces that are actually cross-platform. So WX Widgets interface can work on Linux, it can work on one of the BSDs, it can work on Windows. So it's an interesting little toolkit, but
I actually like the name, the new name, better.
That's okay.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, frankly, I think it's a little bit more expressive.
Have you seen WX widgets? It's a nice toolkit.
Yeah, I've always been familiar with it.
I've never programmed for it, but I've installed software that uses it, and it works very well. It's very, very clean. It seems to be very, very efficient. And the nice thing about it is it ports port it between Windows and Linux like crazy.
Yeah, but it really makes the name more definitive. I often forget what the hell WX Windows was, okay? I have to sit there and think about it. Now, what was that? What was that? Because it's so similar to so many other names. But, WX Widgets is very clearly able to be branded as a toolkit. It sounds like a toolkit. And so I think that in the long run, they're going to be happy, even though, they're sort of being forced to do this by Microsoft. I think in the long run, they're going to be happy that they're going through the grief. So, anything else, Russ?
Yeah, going on with the attack of the evil empire here, there was the thread out on Slashdot recently about speculation that Microsoft is actually trying to pay off and influence UN standards. And just reading some of the things associated with that is kind of interesting.
Once again, we are shocked that any such accusation should be made.
Yeah.
Exactly.
who would have expected something like that to happen? But the irony is, will Microsoft really have to even lift a finger to accomplish that goal? Because our federal government seems to be doing the job quite handily for them.
In addition, there's rumors on the net in some of the deeper threads on that Slashdot article commentary that Bill Gates is possibly trying to just buy out the UN.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah, that seems unlikely. But I don't know.
Not that you're not corrupted yet, but where would you take the check?
Yeah, who would you write the check to?
The UN, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, remember, let's temper this. It's on Slashdot.
Yes, indeed. Next article up that I have is an interesting little piece called Debunking Common GNU Linux Myths.
That was a good one.
Okay. And then let's go back to Microsoft after this, then.
Oh, okay. Jump back.
Okay, well, yeah, because I don't want to get away from the Microsoft thread now that we're on it.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead.
But because the thing with just the general story about the defense of the trademark is really starting to pop up a lot.
Yep.
In the news, not just with these guys, but the ongoing battle with Windows and some of the other vendors in Europe, where Microsoft apparently has a little bit better trademark protection than they do here in the United States. It seems that Microsoft is starting to stretch their muscle again. And again, I may be reading more into this than is really there, but I think they're starting to perhaps feel their oats, that they're perhaps out of danger with the courts here in the United States. They probably wouldn't have gotten away with going after Windows 2 years ago. And they're having some, actual positive traction in that effort. And so I don't know whether we should interpret this as a bad sign or not. I mean, I really don't have enough evidence to look at, but I think that it's perhaps time that we pay a little bit more watchful eye in terms of some of these behaviors that Microsoft is starting to once again exhibit domestically. They've never stopped, behaving on the dark side outside of the United States. They've been safe to do that, but they're starting to do it here again domestically, and I think we need to be very, very wary and careful of that. So what was your next one, Russ?
Yeah, it was a little piece called Debunking Common GNU Linux Myths over at the GEM report.
Yeah, that's good. Good report.
And the interesting thing here, you know, I mean, frankly, I've been working with this subject for longer than I can recall. You know, I probably started talking about this subject back in around 97 or so. But it's interesting to watch how it has progressed over the years. And so whenever I see a piece like this, I always want to take a look and see what people perceive as being the hot items. It's interesting that the number one question is there SCO intellectual property in the Linux kernel? Followed, interestingly, by number two, if I switch to GNU Linux, I can't use Microsoft Office anymore. Inside some sense, I think that those are suitable first and second items to handle these days.
The first one wouldn't have been there a year ago.
Right. And, in fact, number three actually follows up, too. It says, does Windows really have a lower total cost of ownership than GNU Linux? And that's one that's definitely the result of Microsoft's campaigns in the past year. So I think it's interesting just to see how the emphasis has changed. But on the whole, I think things are pretty well on track in this regard. The piece, I think, from what I've seen, handles things pretty well.
But I like number four, too, Russ. Open source programs have hundreds of different versions because there are so many people working on that project.
Yeah.
Now, that's the only time, that kind of FUD is the only kind of FUD where having expansive development program becomes a liability.
And it's interesting that this is actually one of the older pieces of FUD. I mean, I haven't seen this actively dealt with in a few years. But if it made the list, it may be that some people are hitting it again. But it just goes to show that some things that we in the community take for granted, like the fact that the projects are run in particular ways. Obviously, there are some people out in the great wide world that still haven't gotten the word.
Well, there was a story that came out on the wires just a couple hours ago. I've been having bad luck with my internet connection this evening, and right now, although I've got a connection to the IRC, I can't seem to get through and have a functioning browser right at the moment, because I'd love to pull up the story and quote it, but I was looking at the story just an hour or two before showtime, and this story was really filled with present day FUD. The author of the article was trying to defend Microsoft on the thesis that how dare the closed source or how dare the open source community leap to the conclusion that their software is any more secure than closed source software is, because how would we know?
Is this one of those deals from is this an article from eWeek? I think I saw the headline on that.
Actually, I think it was an article that eWeek may have picked up off of AP. Because I for some reason AP sticks
in my
mind.
Yeah, here it is. Is open source code really examined for security any more than closed source?
Yeah, this actually, Arnie, you should really read this one, because whoever the author of that is maybe a candidate next week for Clueless Pundit of the Week.
Well, okay, so, but look at this. Before we get all exercised about this, reflect at the fact that they're having to use this question in their propaganda is a victory for us.
That's true. Yes, in a warped way, that's true.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, it looks like this is written by Larry Seltzer. And a security article in eWeek magazine. It looks like
not the current king of the clueless idiots. That would be Rob Enderle.
Yeah, Rob Enderle is
my laptop is a Ferrari. Vroom vroom.
Yeah. I wonder if it's red. You know, Ferrari's got to be red. I wonder if it's.
I saw a picture. It is. It's a sort of candy red color.
Oh my god.
Yes, it's just as cheesy as you think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Russ, do you have any more?
Yeah, one last one, the one to watch.
The one to watch for this week and the time ahead, as far as I'm concerned, is the report that MySQL-AB is going to tweak its open source license. And it will be interesting to see exactly how that lands. The article seemed to be just a little bit vapid on this. So hopefully we will see intelligent tweakings and not things that are dangerous.
The MySQL people are pretty sharp.
Well, they've been getting beaten up a lot.
I know.
In the last week for their new license.
Yeah, well, it seems like there's been a whole bunch of strange, contentious little licensing issues here inside the last few weeks. So it all bears some watching here. We want to make sure that people stay on the straight and narrow. I mean, it's one thing to change things; it's another to lose your way. So this bears some watching at the weeks ahead. Hopefully it will not be anything severe or anything. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep. Now, again, I'm sort of blind to the Internet right now, so I cannot see any of the other stories that we have posted out there. So I can't even remember the stories that I posted. But I'd sort of like to shift gears. Cygnus, Eric is here with us tonight. I'd like to ask Eric a question, because an interesting series of articles, I shouldn't say articles, but an interesting series of documents were written over the course of the last week, and it was interesting to me, sitting on the sidelines, watching the situation evolve.
Oh, I know what you must be talking about.
And so I think people could learn something from you, Eric. and here, let me set it up. A very foolish young man, but I'm just going to call him Nathan. I'm not going to give his last name because I don't want to embarrass him. A young man, unproved as a writer, not a real lot of experience within his local community. He had the compunction to write an open letter, a white paper that he published on the Internet, and surprise, surprise, in the search for new content every day, it ended up on Linux Today. And this was a fairly poorly crafted document, riddled with factual errors, and, you know, just basically not a good thing to, if you're really going to call yourself a Linux advocate, not a good place for you to start your career towards Linux advocacy. Now, you know, this is a well-meaning young guy who really didn't anticipate that he was going to be savaged to the length and breadth that he did get savaged. But when you walk with the big boys, you need to be prepared to get clubbed with a stick. And the kid not only got savaged on Linux Today, but he got really savaged on Slashdot.
Not like that's anything unusual.
Yeah, duh. Especially when your article's riddled with errors. Now, it just so happened the same day you wrote a white paper about Sun that was completely filled with facts. I mean, really? Okay. Now the VP from Sun was a little PO'd at you, and so when he wrote his response to you, there was a significant amount of, I thought, surprising amount of support. And well, there, you know, not everybody loves everybody, and so there's a group out there that doesn't like me. There's a group out there that doesn't like you, Eric.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm well aware of it.
And so my I guess the direction I'm heading in is your article, well-written, full of fact, it was absolutely correct in every way, shape, and form, But you still got savaged.
To be fair, there were some people who quibbled about my comparing share prices, and it turns out it's a fairly there's a fairly complicated argument over whether that's appropriate. People thought I should have compared market cap or quarterly returns, but what I was going after was investors' future expectations of return per invested dollar. It turns out if you do that, you can compare share prices. But there are people who think I'm an idiot for having used that comparison. But other than that, most people were pretty supportive.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking you is, you've been doing this for a long, long time, and of course
I'm aged and evil. Yes.
You're aged and evil, but still, you've had your share of whiplashes go across your back.
Oh, yes.
And so I got a sneaking suspicion that this young man, Nathan, is actually listening tonight. And so for all of the Nathans out there that are thinking about doing this kind of thing...
You want me to give them some advice?
Some advice.
Okay, I got some advice for you. First, never, ever utter bad grammar, poor syntax, or poor vocabulary choices. If you can't produce polished English, stay out of the game. Barrier number one for some of our advocates is some of our advocates sound illiterate. You have to leap that hurdle before you can even get to having the content of your message evaluated.
And learn to spell.
Yeah, learn to spell.
Learn
correct syntax. Learn to construct prose that actually flows. If you don't think you're good at this, practice it a lot and try out anything you write on your friends. Not just your friends, but people who have good taste, people who understand how to read and write and evaluate English. Try it out on people who have editorial skills before you publish it. That's piece of advice number one, because one of the things that Nat did wrong was he let something get out on the net that looks like, well, it's intelligent, but it also looks like everybody's stereotype of the programmer who can't write. You cannot get away with that if you're going to play the advocacy game at a high level. It just doesn't work. The rest of the world has different standards, and if you want your message to reach them, you have to meet those standards. So that's piece of advice number one. Be damn sure you can spell correctly. Construct your prose carefully. If you're at all, if you have any misgivings at all about your ability to produce high quality polished prose, bounce it off people who know that kind of writing before you publish it. That's a piece of advice number one. Piece of advice number two: check your facts.
And have somebody else check your facts.
That's right. And have somebody else check your facts, too. Let's see. Those are the two biggies. I guess the third one would be bear your audience in mind. The third mistake Nat made, and again, he meant well. I'm not coming down on him because I think he's a bad person. The third mistake he made was he didn't bear his audience in mind. He's writing to persuade people who wear suits, but his letter is all about why people who wear T-shirts and jeans would think this was a good idea. Bear your audience in mind. You can't talk in terms of your agenda for the world. You have to talk in terms of your target audience's agenda for the world, what they want, what they need, what they're after. You have to persuade them in their terms, not yours. That's why when I write letters like this, you see me using what amounts to business school jargon. You see me using terms like return on investment. You see me genuflecting before all the idols of capitalism. Not that I think that's a bad thing. I like capitalism. But there's a rhetorical point as well as a substantive one here. Okay? You have to use the language that your audience is comfortable with, and you have to bear your audience's goals in mind. Forget your own goals. Something I tell people when I do my advocacy talk, when you're doing advocacy, your worst enemy is your own idealism.
Absolutely.
Your worst enemy is your own idealism, because if you listen to your own idealism, you'll end up talking about that, and you simply will not connect with the people you're trying to reach. And by the way, if your worst enemy is your own idealism, your best friends are fear, greed, and vanity.
Eric, I need to break it in for 1 second.
Yeah.
Everybody on the IRC is asking where the URL for the article is. I'm purposely not using the young man's name because, again, I don't want to embarrass him. But if you just go to Linux Today and search on open letter, it will be one of the – I'm sure it will show up as one of the documents from the last week or two. It was published Monday of last week. So that gives you a time frame.
Okay.
But for those people who are interested in looking it up, they can.
Shall I continue ranting about this for a bit?
Yes.
Okay. So I said, your worst enemy is your own idealism. Your best friend is your best friends are fear, greed, and vanity. Not your own fear, greed, and vanity, but the fear, greed, and vanity of your audience.
Like cheap weapons are fear and surprise.
That's right. Remember that human beings, we are not fundamentally rational creatures. Rationality is a lately evolved subsystem that's been bolted on top of a brain that's doing other things most of the time.
Like listening to your Willy.
Yes. That's right. So rationality is a recently evolved system. It's been bolted on top of a brain that is mostly not rational, that is mostly run by instinctual drives for things like, sex, maintaining territory, asserting control over your environment, making social contracts with others, so forth. You need to appeal to people on that instinctive level, and the emotions that drive people on that instinctive level are fear, greed, vanity, and I suppose I should have mentioned lust.
Yep.
But you can you don't get to appeal to lust very often when you're talking to corporate executives, not when you look like me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple more things. Again, and I'm doing this for a real educational purpose because I want people. I'm not telling people to censor yourself. I'm just telling people to be careful of what they're doing. Another one of the key things that I found fault with this particular open letter was that words mean things. And I suppose this could be corroborative of your saying, check your facts. But words mean things. And when you use language that is subject to tone, those words can mean completely different things than you intended.
Yeah, depending on the state of mind of your audience. Always an important thing to keep in mind.
And so you may not have meant to say what you said, but you still said it. So my point is, you really need to be careful because words mean things. And you have to be aware of the fact that the meanings are in the ear of the listener. Not your own, necessarily your own brain. And the last thing I want to ask you on this subject in general, Eric, is just period. You know, is it a good idea for somebody who is inexperienced to use the term open letter?
I haven't thought about it from that angle before.
I guess what I'm getting at is that too broad of a leap from someone who is uncredentialed to jump into?
I guess you could make a case that it is. I wasn't thinking about it from that angle because I don't tend to think in terms of people's credentials. I tend to think in terms of what they do, what they accomplish. If you're going to write an open letter, you should... it's not something that's wise to do unless you have reason to believe that your audience grants you the credentials to do that. Not the people you think you're writing for, but your audience. Okay? It doesn't matter, for example, except as a secondary thing, that a lot of hackers out there think that I'm credentialed to write open letters on their behalf. What matters is Fortune 500 CEOs believe that.
Yes. I agree with you. Yep.
Okay, I mean, it's very nice that lots of people think I can do this sort of thing and be legitimate. I mean, I'm glad they trust me. But the really important thing is that the audience believes it, the intended audience believes it. And if you don't have solid reason to think that your intended audience will believe that about you, you're best not, again, you're best off not entering the game.
Yep. Yeah, it's just that my feeling where perhaps a very well-meaning young man made a terrible error or two or three.
Oh, I wouldn't say it was a terrible error.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm not inclined to be real upset about this because, I mean, how else are people going to get experience except by taking risks?
Correct. And that's my point here. My point here is I think the risk was a valid risk to take had he not done it in the form of an open letter.
Hmm.
If he had published it as an editorial on a portal somewhere, it would have been fine. It would have been an opinion. But, and I may be wrong on this, okay, but this is just the sense that I have gotten out of the goofy thing that we call the open source community, that when you publish something called an open letter, you are subject to a very high standard.
Yes, it's very true.
And so I think my feeling is that was really the mistake he made, was the venue he chose of an open letter.
And by the way, I think it's good. I think it's unequivocally a good thing that the open source community is critical about that sort of endeavor, because it definitely should be. There's a lot at stake when you do something like that.
Right. That's right. Okay, well, let's move on. We're running a little tight on time already, but Arnie, do you have any stories?
I have a couple. Russ hit a couple of mine already. The WX widgets was high on my list this week because that's a toolbox that I'm kind of familiar with a little bit, not from a programmer standpoint, but someone that might be from a programmer's standpoint. And I was just wondering about this Microsoft thing with the... Hello?
What was that?
That's the party girls. No.
Yes, it is. This is Stacy.
Hi.
Hi.
We're not quite up to the second segment, Stacy, so just hang on out, and we'll be right with
you. I'll hang on.
Okay. The WX widgets is a nice toolkit, but I was understanding... Excuse me.
That's quite a party.
Okay, sorry. No, I'm all...
You're distracted.
Distracted.
Stop thinking about the party girls.
No. well, Windows is fighting this thing, and I was wondering, like, this goes back to, like, a similar case what's the name of that paper company? Tried to trademark Kleenex and was thrown out of court because Kleenex was too generic. The fact of the matter is that Windows is generic, and I was wondering what the chances is that when they try to enforce their copyright that maybe Johnson's Wax comes and says, "Wait a minute."
I'll tell you where you've got an error here.
Yeah.
Window, singular.
Yeah.
Is generic.
Ah,
Windows with an S is a trademark.
Yeah, that's kind of close, though, isn't it?
It very well may be that.
And this is something I've heard before from people with legal experience that may be too generic.
It may very well be that Michael Robertson, in the long run, would have been better off if he would have called his company Lindo, as opposed to Lindo's.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that you're citing is that Apple developed Windowing.
Yes.
Not Windowsing, but Windowing.
Yeah.
Technology. Okay?
Yeah.
And it sounds stupid to be quibbling over one letter, but so far, that has been the successful legal defense of Microsoft. And
the law is made of such quibbles.
Yep, the law.
Yep.
the laws.
Trust me on this. I'm married to a lawyer.
Yep. So
that's a, but that's an interesting take, because I've you know, like I've seen this debate. This has been going on for several years now, for a variety of cases, and of course everybody usually caves in on the deal because, like, it's, you know, just a name, but not to Microsoft apparently. Another one of the stories that I saw, which was very interesting, and I found this very, from a technical standpoint, very interesting, is in an OSDIR.com, which is an O'Reilly site. There is a story about Mute, which is a peer-to-peer file sharing, anonymous peer-to-peer file sharing that uses the behavior of ants as a model, technological model. And I didn't get through the whole article because I didn't have time, but it sounds very interesting, and I'm going to pursue that a little further, see what that's about.
Sounds sort of dirty to me.
Well, I mean, you know, peer-to-peer is peer-to-peer. You know, we can think of a lot of reasons
it's the anonymous part.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with anonymous. Freenet's anonymous.
Yeah, I know, and there's something about Freenet that just bothers me, so.
Well, I mean, you know, but Freenet means lots of things to lots of people, and it's not all porn.
We are up to the break time, so everybody, sit back and relax. Kevin's going to put on a tune. We're going to take a short 3-minute break. And on the other side of the break, we're going to be joined by our guest, Stacy Quant. Stacy is a good friend and a researcher for our industry group leading open source development laboratories. So we're going to be talking about their recent announcement of a desktop initiative. So everybody hang in there. We'll be back after the break. Kevin, put on a tune.
Savon,
the whole must read romance.
Savon,
it wins you at a glance.
Savon,
gives happy feet a chance
to dance. Your form
is like a clinging vine.
Your lips
are warm and sweet as wine.
Your cheeks
are soft and close to mine, dear. Bye. A perfect holiday,
Savon,
where we can glide and sway,
Savon,
just let me stop away with you.
Stop with you, and the shovel. a jar.
A perfect holiday.
Savoy.
Where we can glide and sway.
Savoy.
Just let me stop away.
With you.
And we're back.
It is the Linux Show for February the 24th, is it? I've lost track of my calendar. February the 24th, 2004, the last Tuesday in February, a leap year February. We will be back same time next week in March and be bringing you another edition of the Tuesday Night Linux Show. Make sure you do catch our show next week. In addition to giving you more details about the up-and-coming modification of our technology that will allow you to call into the show, we're going to be starting to sneak out some additional announcements that you're not going to want to miss. So make sure you do check out the show on Tuesday night of next week. We'll be giving lots of very cool news coming up. And Doc should be back with us by then as well. On segment number two tonight, we're bringing in a guest. I've known Stacy for a long, 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 long time. She has worn many hats within the open source community, working at Forrester and other places as a commentator and pundit, somebody who definitely understands a great deal about the Linux community. And I was really excited when I got the news that that you had been invited to join the team at the Open Source Development Lab. So, Stacy, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you.
And so let's start out the conversation by asking the obvious question. What is it like working at OSDL? That's got to be one of the coolest working environments there is.
It's a lot of fun, and one of the more thrilling moments was probably going to the CGL face-to-face meeting, the Carrier Grade Linux face-to-face meeting in Boca Raton. And that might sound sort of boring to some people, but it's really looking at gaps in, enabling Carrier Grade Linux and, looking at some of the requirements that some of the vendors feel that their customers require. So it's actually quite energetic, and you can actually end up with some debates among different people in the room. So that was sort of more, as far as the technical implication of working for OSDL, that was probably one of the more interesting. And then, of course, I still do the briefings with vendors and follow the industry. So, but it is a really cool place to work. It's very cool to actually be able to use a Linux laptop finally and not have your employer say that you shouldn't. when is it just a fringe benefit?
Yeah, very cool. I think the idea of saying that you work on that team has just got to be sort of a gratification of, a gratification of a career path. It hasn't been easy always being part of the open source community, going through the .com implosion and the recession of recent years. It has not been easy, and so to finally see things positive happening to friends in the community like you getting the gig at OSDL. I just say wahoo! How cool! A real kudo for you to get that gig. So,
thank you.
But let's talk about why you are here. First of all, let me give a disclaimer. I have known, and most of the people on the panel here have known Stacy for quite some time as a friend. We've run into each other at tons and tons of conferences over the years, but we're not going to be cutting Stacy any slack tonight just because she's a friend. She happens to be...
that's right. This is the open source community. We beat up on our friends.
Yeah, she even knows they're our friends. Stacy is in the uncomfortable position tonight. Well, hopefully not uncomfortable position.
I don't think it'll be uncomfortable.
But we've invited somebody from OSDL to come on the show tonight to talk about the January announcement of the desktop initiative by OSDL. Stacy, so just to catch you up, through most of December and the first week or so of January, we had an ongoing series of shows where every single week we were talking about Linux and the desktop, and we had
mm-hmm.
we had an important topic of focus for that night. It was, you know, representatives of KDE, representatives of GNOME, Bruce Perens. You know, one person or another was coming on the show for a series of shows that were about 5 weeks long. And so we've had a break now for about a month of not talking about the desktop at all. And so I've sort of been wanting to get somebody from OSDL ever since I heard about the announcement, but you guys travel so much, you're hard to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, just start out by explaining the rationale behind why all of a sudden, when OSDL was so focused on things like carrier-grade Linux, what was the impetus to all of a sudden?
Right. Well, I think it's important to start with, you know, what is OSDL? And OSDL is a, you know, member, vendor, you know, focused, with some end user members as well, consortium. So, you know, the members such as, you know, IBM, Intel, you know, HP, Sun, and others, you know, to a large degree, I mean, they will, you know, obviously guide, you know, a lot of the initiatives. So the desktop is an important initiative for a number of vendors. So, you know, OSDL already had or has a data center Linux work group and a carrier-grade Linux work group. So given some of the, you know, obviously the trends in the industry and the interest among a lot of customers in having a Linux desktop, there was really a rationale for, you know, starting another work group. However, this work group is very different than the other two work groups. The other two work groups look at more at gaps in Linux capabilities and potentially, you know, finding what the gaps are and then making arguments about potential features, functionality needs to be added to Linux kernel. The desktop initiative is not about that. The desktop initiative is more about looking at usage models such as, you know, point of sale and kiosk and, you know, call centers, you know, more fixed function type of desktops. It's not about, at least at this point, challenging, you know, Microsoft's hegemony on the desktop. It's not about, you know, telling users, you know, KDE versus GNOME or setting, you know, criteria as far as, you know, which desktop applications, you should use because OSDL is obviously not going to, as far as I know, you know, make strong, specific product recommendations. It's more about the usage models, as I already mentioned. So, you know, a lot of people have been wondering, you know, is, you know, OSDL going to, you know, focus more on the, you know, programmer or consumer desktop? And the answer is no, this is more about corporate users and about, you know, one of the users actually part of the desktop initiative is Ford Motor Company. So it is very much focused on, you know, corporate use and, but more, you know, a model trying to figure out, you know, what really works. So it's not about gaps in functionality as far as, you know, kernel issues. This is more a user space issue to a large degree. Hmm. I hope that's helpful.
To a degree. I know everyone in the IRC that has been aware of you coming on the show for the last 24 hours has been asking me the obvious question, and actually it's a two-part question. Number one is, did did the advent of Bruce Perens starting up User Linux motivate your vendors to...
I don't want to speak for all the vendors, but as far as I know, that was not the motivating factor, because as far as I know about what Bruce is looking at, as far as, you know, his initiative, it doesn't necessarily target the same things that OSDL's initiative is targeting. So there isn't really an overlap between the two. I mean, they both talk about the desktop, but they talk about it in different ways.
Well, to a degree. So you see absolutely no...
As far as I know, there's no connection between OSDL launching this initiative. It's really more about, this has probably started, as far as the impetus for this starting at OSDL, it was, really more about vendors seeing that their customers were deploying Linux desktops and, or at least wanting to deploy Linux desktop and coming up with a strategy. And the reason to do this multi-vendor was really, to obviously have some, priorities that all vendors really could participate in, and having OSDL really, driving that forward. So it's very different than what Bruce Perens is doing.
You see these as parallel efforts then?
Well, parallel in the sense that they're both about the Linux desktop.
Yeah.
Yes.
What kind of pressures do you feel that this is bringing to bear on OEMs?
As far as the pressure in OEMs, I mean, the pressure is really from end user customers potentially saying, I'd like to deploy a Linux desktop, help me do this. And, OSDL along with other, OSDL is working with freedesktop.org as well, to come up with some of these usage models and understand, or at least guide, some, advice about, deploying a Linux desktop. So, I think as far as what the vendors are doing is, their customers are saying, we're still a Linux desktop. And there are some vendors that are further along, giving some, obviously implementing them already. And OSDL is really creating probably more awareness and visibility about different usage models. Obviously, it's not selling products.
Yeah. Now you gave one name, Ford Motor, as part of the...
Yeah, Ford Motor Company participates on the... is part of this initiative as far as an end user participating in the desktop work group.
Do you know if Ford presently has an ongoing internal user beta going on right now?
I know that Ford is evaluating the use of a Linux desktop. I don't want to speak for Ford.
But you can
obviously there are implications of seeing Ford involved in this. So you could extrapolate from that and obviously think that yes, there probably is great interest at Ford in having at least examining a Linux desktop alternative.
There's a lot of critical mass there.
Right, and the other thing that this is not about, at least from an OSDL perspective, is it's not about a Windows versus Linux proposition, at least, in the way that OSDL is approaching it. There are obviously end users that are looking at a Linux desktop as an alternative to running a Windows operating system, and then they can use CodeWeavers or obviously something that supports Wine to support maybe, Windows applications, but that is not what OSDL is targeting at this point.
Okay. I'll just take your word for that.
Well, that's my understanding. You're doubting me.
I'm not doubting you. I think statements, generalized statements like that, of something is not a Windows versus Linux thing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
This isn't on you. Okay.
No, I appreciate your skepticism. I understand what
that
you're saying.
That sort of thing always smells of spin, let's put it plainly.
Yeah, right. Well, just as far as I know, as far as the work group, they are not targeting this as a Windows versus Linux.
But it's not necessarily Stacy's spin.
That's right. It's one business model versus another business model. So, okay, fine. Well, this is very interesting because I would never have anticipated, if you would have asked me, no one did, but if you would have asked me back in December with the two work groups that were going on at the lab, I never would have anticipated there being quite so quick a reaction to starting up the third work group as being focused on the desktop. I think just that in of itself is a major statement in terms of the user, the enterprise user interest level growing so rapidly. I think that in itself is very indicative direction of where our entire industry group is heading off into. Is there any, and you may not be able to answer this question, is there any other projects in the works at OSDL?
Well, there are other projects, and there may be further work groups. I can tell you about some of what I'm working on. I don't necessarily want to go into potential work groups because that, you know, they may not want to have people, you know, talking about that yet. But
okay.
I mean, there are, you know, one of the things that we are doing is OSDL is you know, trying to take a more visible stance as far as people speaking at events. So a number of people who work in the lab and other, you know, there are other people at OSDL in the marketing group are planning to, submit to a number of different events. And one of the interesting things that I'm going to be working on is looking more at workload usage models. And in particular, large data warehouses running on Linux, and you know, profiling workloads, and you know that would sort of obviously extrapolating data based on you know a sample of customers, and then looking at deployment models.
Are you having to develop all your own metrics to do this?
When you say develop your metrics, I mean obviously you ask a number of questions. If that's what you mean. I mean, you have to define your methodology if that's what you're driving at.
Yes, that's what I'm driving at.
Right, yeah, and obviously I think one of the key things about any study is the methodology. And that's what I've always taken certain other companies to task when I think their methodology is flawed. So having a sound methodology is, you know, a very important starting point.
Well, you have a good background for that. That's certainly the case. We are up to the time, and I'd like to thank you, Stacy, for joining us this evening.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it.
Would like you to continue joining us as OSDL makes further announcements. The organization OSDL is very rapidly becoming a very important leader within the community, and It's not one that really gets much of a voice before the community. So it will be good to see you going out to a lot of these events, as you just said, keeping people better informed of what's going on inside of OSDL. So thanks for coming by, and I'm encouraging you to stop by any time when you've got a message to tell. All righty?
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to have you join us. That is it for tonight. We are up to the hour. I'd like to thank Stacy and Eric and the rest of the crew here at the Linux Show for showing up for another edition. We'll be back next week at the same time. Want to remind all you listeners to make sure you check out our website. If you have not signed up for our mailing list yet, please do so. There's a link for it right on the website. There's also a link for the Help Get Kevin a Gentner Unit. That fundraising drive is about to close, so get in there and help support our efforts to get that Gentner up and running. We should have it within the next 4 to 6 weeks, and then you will be able to call us. So until next week, everybody, this has been the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show. We'll see you all next week.